a disability and chronic illness advocate. I share my life on Instagram under Chronically Madeline. I'm from Minnesota in the United States. And yeah, I'm 21, just living life right now. Yeah.
And what motivated you to start talking about your experiences on social media? Was it because you just felt like it was something that you were passionate about, or was it more of a advocacy, wanting to change the conversation?
It really started because I didn't know anyone with the conditions I have. So I have something called postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS, and I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disease. And I had never been able to talk to someone with those conditions. So I started an Instagram just to find people who like understood. And I just continued to share my stories, my experiences. And I've been trying to get more into advocacy lately and policy change too. So.
And what about it? What about policy? Is it that you find frustrating or that you want to change?
I'm very passionate about schooling. So I had to leave school when I was in eighth grade. So I was 13. I had to leave school because I was too sick to stay in school. And my school wouldn't give me the accommodations I needed because they didn't believe that my diagnosis, that I actually had it. They believed it was just anxiety. So I had to leave school, and I was unable to graduate high school because of that. And I'm very passionate about changing the system and the way we treat kids with chronic illnesses so they don't have to experience what I experienced.
And how's that been received? Have you found that people are accommodating to that in the USA?
Yeah, it's it's difficult. I've just started doing more advocacy recently, so I haven't been able to get super into it. But both my parents are school counselors. So my mom has a lot of kids with chronic illnesses, and she treats them a lot differently than the other people at her school, just because she has a daughter who experienced a lot of struggle going through school. So there's definitely this thought about kids in that they're somehow making up illnesses. They're somehow faking what they have. So kids are not often believed and not often given the resources they need. I'm very passionate about changing that view, and that kids can have chronic illnesses, kids can be disabled, and they deserve accommodations and they deserve to be listened to.
And for you, you mentioned there about the challenges that you face at school. If you could go back and provide that role model for your younger self, what would you say to yourself back then?
I would tell her I was very introverted and I did not like talking to people. And I would tell her that it's okay to talk about my experiences and talk about the struggles I go through. I can talk, like, I didn't feel comfortable talking to my friends about it, so I ended up losing all my friends. And I would tell her, it's okay to share your life with people you trust. I felt so lonely back then. And I think I would just tell her, it's okay to reach out. It's okay to ask for help. And it's okay to be weak. Not that I was weak, but show that I'm having trouble. Yeah.
Do you think that speak about mental health there and about the challenges of being perceived as weak for wanting to talk about how you feel and having those bad days. Do you find that society still has a long way to go to be more accepting of us when we talk about those bad days?
Definitely, yeah. There's a lot of stigma around talking about having like really hard days, especially like with chronic illnesses. Like some days it's hard to just like brush your teeth. And there's a lot of people don't understand that just simple things like hygiene can be really hard for people who are chronically ill or disabled. And there's this whole thing in where if you're unclean, then you're somehow like disgusting. But sometimes all you can do when you're chronically ill is like just get like some wipes and wipe yourself down. So I think there's a lot of almost like ableism that is difficult to kind of explain to people who don't understand it.
And when you say you didn't have any role models growing up, who do you look to now as a source of inspiration and kind of, I don't want to like use term like motivation because it feels a very like that inspiration porn element of it, like mm-hmm. that was talked about recently in a TED talk, but like who do you look to for advice and look to for kind of aspiration of like advocacy for the disabled community?
Mm-hmm. I really look towards, well, first I look towards my mom because she did a lot of like women's advocacy back in her like early career. So I look towards her for like that inspiration to create policy change. Like she's talked to like our state senate. And so I look to her for like that strength. And then for people with similar health conditions, there's a few people I follow online that like inspire me. One of them recently was Kaylee Bays, who's on So You Think You Can Dance, and she has EDS and POTS, and she is an ambulatory wheelchair user. And she's on a dance show, dancing in her wheelchair, which is so cool. It's not something people get to see often. And it's not even, I used to love dancing growing up, and it's not, until recently, I didn't even think about trying to dance with a wheelchair. So recently, that's who I've been like really inspired by.
Amazing. I think I saw that on TikTok. And I've got a friend who's really into dancing as well. And I love it's. I think it's just a very beautiful way of expressing yourself as well. And like, so being able to make it more inclusive is so amazing.
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you've encountered? And how have you kind of adapted to the challenges that have been presented to you? Because I know that in America, one of the biggest issues, I think you put a TikTok up the other day, where it's like, where does all your money go? And then it was you in hospital. Has that been a big issue for you in terms of getting the funding to help facilitate care and treatment?
Yeah, so I'm still able to be under my parents' insurance, and it's pretty good. We still have to pay for a lot of things out of pocket. Like I get these injections in my neck that aren't covered by insurance because they're kind of still seen as experimental, even though it's been around since like the 90s. So that's difficult. And currently I live with my parents because I can't have a job. I do get disability insurance from the government, thankfully. It took me a year and a half to get that. But it's barely enough to like just survive at my parents' house. They like to keep you right on the edge of poverty. They're like, you can't have more than $2,000 in your bank account at any time, or you could get your disability taken away. So yeah, it's like it's difficult, definitely.
And do you think that, because I know you said you had to, you lost a lot of friends growing up because you didn't talk about things. How's that changed as you've got older and you've been able to have the confidence to share your lived experience? Do you think you found a new tribe and a new community around you?
Yeah, I've definitely found a lot of amazing people who are understanding, and I don't feel different with them. I still, because I didn't have like that high school experience with those, the like social groups, like I didn't have any friends for 4 years. I still struggle a little bit socially. So I still I don't know what to say exactly at all times, and I don't know how to like reach out to people. So it's something I'm working on, but I definitely feel a lot more comfortable just being myself and just expressing myself and my feelings. It's a lot more than my like 13-year-old self felt comfortable with.
I know when I speak to a lot of people, they say that social media gives them a voice and it allows them to bridge that gap. And obviously with talking about your lived experience, it can be very difficult, even on the best of days. So do you think it helps you to kind of have, not a barrier, but it gives you a safe space to express yourself and express who you want to be?
Yeah, definitely. When I first started my account, that was like 5 years ago. I remember feeling, I was like so anxious. I had all these thoughts in my head that I had only ever been able to express to like my mom and my therapist. And when I first put my first post out, I remember getting comments from people being like, it was like welcoming me to the community. And just feeling, I'm a lot more open with my emotions now. And I'm a lot more expressive. I feel more comfortable just saying what I believe in, what my thoughts are, my experiences. I even feel, I'm more confident even talking to doctors. I'll even like talk back to them. I'm like, you're not listening to me. This is what I'm saying. So being able to have that like community that of people who understand on like Instagram online, a lot of people who aren't chronically ill see like having social media almost as like a negative thing. And it can be very negative. No doubt about that. But for some people, that's the only social experience they can have. And that's like currently still my only social experience I really get to have, because it's hard for me to leave the house. So it can be really freeing. And a lot of people don't understand that.
And living with your conditions, obviously, it sounds like some days can be better than others. Mm-hmm. How do you manage that? How does that affect your routine? I know you said there that you don't really leave the house very much.
Yeah.
What took me through a normal day for you in terms of?
Yeah, so a normal day for me is basically just spent at home. So I usually wake up, take my meds, because if I don't, my heart rate will be out of control. I've been recently studying to get my high school equivalent diploma, so my GED. And then it depends on how much energy I have. Sometimes I'll do some art. Sometimes I'll like reach out to people on Instagram, or I'll take my dog outside. It can be hard to find things to do just inside the house. But because I also can't drive because of my health issues currently. So I have to rely on other people to help me get out of the house, which can be tough since both my parents are full-time school workers. So yeah, it's mostly spent at home. just doing whatever my mind can handle, because some days my brain, I get really bad brain fog, so sometimes my brain just can't take in information. Yeah.
And for those who aren't aware, what does Ehlers-Danlos
syndrome.
Yeah, how does that, what does that look like? What does it entail?
Yeah, so it's a connective tissue disease, so it affects all the connective tissue in your body. So I like to think of it as a normal person's connective tissue is like super glue, but mine is like Elmer's glue or like just craft glue. it doesn't stick together as well. So I get a lot of joint pain. I have something called craniocervical instability because of it, which is the ligaments that hold my skull to my spine are basically damaged. So I get a lot of headaches and migraines and neck pain because of that. My POTS is caused by my Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And one of the key like things about Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is hypermobility. So like my elbows extend past 15 degrees when I stretch them out, and I can like put my thumb to my wrist. But I also, EDS can also cause a lot of like GI issues. So, because it can affect anything that has connective tissue. So it's your veins, it's your organs, it's your skin, it's basically everything in your body. So I have GI issues because of that. And it's an all-encompassing illness. And people like to say, if you can't connect it, the issues, think connective tissues, because it can just cause random issues everywhere in the body that don't seem connected, but once you think of EDS, it's like, oh, yeah, that's what it is.
And do you get people that judge you because it's not a visible disability as such and it's more hidden?
Yeah, I think definitely get that a little bit. I have a bit of a different experience because I live in Rochester, Minnesota, which is the home of the Mayo Clinic. So if there's always people in our town that are in wheelchairs that are like ambulatory wheelchair users. So I don't get as much judgment as probably a lot of other places because of that. But I still definitely feel like if I stand up to grab something when I'm at a store, I can feel people look at me occasionally, because they're like, why is she standing if she's in a wheelchair? So yeah, it's definitely interesting, the looks I can get sometimes.
And when you're faced with that discrimination or that ableism, how do you react? Like, what's your, do you challenge it, or are you, what approach do you take?
I don't say anything. What I usually do is I just act normally. So I try to show them that this is normal, that this is my daily life almost. I'm trying to like show that to them through my actions, by not making a big deal out of it. So I don't look at them. I ignore them. And I just kind of continue living my life. I did one time have this. I was going to the car from a doctor's appointment, and one of the like workers there was pushing me to the car. And he, as I, he was helping me into the car, he said, "Thank you for using a wheelchair, because a lot of the older people here feel like they can't use a wheelchair because it's weak. But you're showing them when you're young and you're using a wheelchair that it's okay to do that." And that like meant a lot to me. So I try to think of not the like ableism, but I try to think of how I'm normalizing, or mm-hmm. I'm attempting to normalize like ambulatory wheelchair users. So.
And if you can speak to anyone who's non-disabled who's listening, what advice would you give to them to be a disability ally?
I would tell them that disabilities are dynamic. They are different for everyone. The same illness looks different in everyone. And while you may not understand some of the things that a disabled person is doing or needs, the disabled person understands why they need it, and that's all that matters. All you can do is just support the people around you if they're disabled. Don't judge other people, or try not to. We're all human, we make instant judgments, but kind of changing that thought in your brain when you have it. I once had one of my mom's friends, they had one of their sidewalk pieces was like lifted up, and they were mad that they had to like pay to get it fixed, until my mom explained that when I'm wheeling around my neighborhood in a wheelchair, there are some driveways I can't go up because of the sidewalk. And they were like, "I had never thought about that." And it changed their perspective on this little thing that they got annoyed with. And they were like, "This is actually an issue for some people." And I thought that knowing that just living my life can change someone's perspective, it feels cool sometimes.
I guess advocating for that, the rights of other people who might be experiencing the same or similar challenges. Mm-hmm. For anyone who's got a disability who might be listening to what you're saying, what advice would you give to them?
I would tell them, well, first, for a while, I didn't recognize myself as disabled. I thought there was like almost like criteria to be disabled. Mm-hmm. And I had like internalized ableism. I still do, something I work through. And once I realized it was that I was disabled, that there isn't this, it's not like gatekeeping. If there's something that your body does that like makes you unable to do something or makes it hard for you to do something, you're disabled. And it's okay. Like, disabled isn't a bad word. It's okay to call yourself disabled. It might make people around you uncomfortable. When I first started calling myself disabled, it made people around me uncomfortable. But over time, they get used to it, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I recognize this." Like that, they are disabled. Disabled doesn't have a look or criteria. So it's okay to like accept yourself as a disabled person and be proud of it, even though it can be hard.
I once watched a TikTok video by Claire Wineland where she did, I think, a TED Talk. And she said, like, there was someone who came up to her in a hospital room and said, like, "I'm so sorry for you." And she's like, "Why are you sorry for me?" Like, do you get that a lot with your condition? Like, the assumption that because you're disabled or because you now feel comfortable identifying as disabled, that sometimes people pity you because they think you're worse off.
Yeah, I get that. I get that a lot. Even from family still occasionally, they'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry you have to like, I'm so sorry you need a wheelchair. And I'm like, it doesn't bug me. It helps me live my life. Like, I don't know why that bothers you. But a lot of people, I think they see like accepting yourself as disabled as like giving up or like as a negative thing. But it's not. It can be life-changing. It was for me. That's the reason I started using a wheelchair. It was because I was like, using a wheelchair isn't a bad thing. And yeah, I get a lot of questions about why I'm in a wheelchair. I was just at the airport a few weeks ago, and the person was wheeling me down to the airplane, and they were like, so did you like hurt your leg? And I was like, no, I just have some health issues. So I definitely get questions. Being a young person in a wheelchair, people have ideas, and they have this thought that it's a temporary thing. That like, oh, you just hurt your leg, so you need a wheelchair. Not understanding that you can be a young person and have a chronic lifelong disability, and it not be recognizable on my body. Like if you just look at me standing, I look normal. Yeah.
I think something that's really stood out from what you said is the obviously we there's two approaches mainly, like the disability community. There's the medical model that says that us as disabled people need to be fixed, and it sounds like that was kind of what you had, people were telling you that you had to be fixed when you were younger, I guess. And then it sounds like as you've got older, you've embraced more of like the social model, which says that, like, yes, those things can help you, like the wheelchair can help you, but it doesn't define you, and it's still, you are still yourself, you're still Madeline, you're not any different just because you're disabled.
Yeah, so I remember even when I was first diagnosed, my first diagnosis was POTS. So when I was first diagnosed, the doctors told me, you got it so young, you'll outgrow it by your 20s. And even as a 12-year-old, I didn't believe that. I was like, I'm not going to just rely on this going away when I'm 20. And it didn't. And trying to like trying to get my thoughts, they just disappeared.
That's okay.
This happens with my brain fog. Let me think. Yeah, so I was often told almost to wait it out, like wait it, oh, you'll grow out of it. And even like my parents somewhat wanted to rely on that, wanted to believe that because they didn't want to see their child sick. And so I, for many years, I kind of, while I didn't believe it, I tried to rely on that idea that these doctors gave me. And once I finally found this community of people with the same condition, I realized that like it's okay. Like even if I do happen to outgrow it someday, if I need to use a mobility aid now, that's okay. It helps me live my life. It helps me do the things I want to do. And it's not giving up. I think it's quite the opposite of giving up. Starting to use a wheelchair or a mobility aid is kind of like empowering yourself to be like, this is the only way I can live my life the way I want to. And if needing a mobility aid is how I get to go out and travel or like just go to a store, that's okay. And it's important to like understand that you can both be disabled and use mobility aid and still try to like want to get better, which I'm not, it's hard to explain, but I still I still do certain things to like help my conditions get better, or try to help them. And I'm never going to not have a chronic illness because my disease is genetic. But having the idea that I can use a wheelchair now, and if one day I don't need it, that's great. But a wheelchair doesn't lessen who I am. It doesn't define who I am. Yeah, if that makes sense.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Madeline, for chatting to me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.